السلام
عليكم.
مع السلامة.
Oi, hello,
good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, how are you? Welcome to International Student Stories, where we share authentic stories from international students studying in the U.S. My name is Simon Hamlin. I am your guide on this journey. Together, we get to explore international students' dreams and passions and the impressive things they do to help shape our schools, society, and the world. Thank you so much for joining us. This is part one of a two-part interview with my guest today, Duke Pham. Duke's story speaks to me on so many different levels. It demonstrates how one person can completely change the course of our lives. Duke was born and raised in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. He came to the U.S. to attend high school, then studied at Santa Rosa Junior College from 2010 to 2013. He transferred to Cornell University, where he received his bachelor's degree in 2015. And in 2020, Duke earned his PhD from Cornell. He is now an assistant professor at Santa Monica College, where he teaches general human anatomy and human physiology. It is so inspirational to see Duke carrying on the spirit of a teacher who profoundly influenced his life. You'll learn all about that and much more in part one of Duke Pham's International Student Story. You grew up in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. If someone were visiting Ho Chi Minh City for the first time, what would you want them to see and experience?
Oh, that's a great question. I love Vietnamese food. I think that that's something that everybody needs to experience once in their entire life. I think that people, when they think of Vietnamese food, they think of Chinese food. But the fundamental difference between Vietnamese food and Chinese food is that we don't use, or Chinese people don't use fish sauce, but we use fish sauce. And so in our food, you can taste the umami flavor in fish sauce. And that's what gives most of the Vietnamese flavor. And so I'd love for you to experience Vietnamese food. There's a variety of regions in Vietnam that give us a lot of different kinds of foods. And so those dishes are something that you should experience.
Do you have a favorite?
I like salads or any kind of mixed salad. I like the sauce that comes with that salad. So recently I've been really into vegan Vietnamese salads. And so I live in Long Beach. And so we can drive probably like 30 minutes south of us to Orange County. There's a huge Vietnamese contingent there. We like to go to this restaurant called Hoa Sen. It means lotus flower in Vietnamese. And they serve really good, really creative Vietnamese vegan sort of dishes. And recently we just were just really into trying out new vegan dishes because I think they're very creative.
And when you say we, who are you referring to?
Yeah, so I live with my husband. His name is Scott. And we met at Cornell University where I was doing my graduate studies in biomedical sciences. And he was studying business at the MBA school called Johnson. And we met at Cornell and he graduated before I did because his program was a little bit shorter than mine. It only took him 2 years to finish. And so when he was done, he moved back to California and I joined him in 2020 when I got the job.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Back in Vietnam, growing up, who were the most influential people in your life?
I would say that my parents were the most influential in my life and also my sister's life as well. Growing up, we didn't have a lot of money because after 1975, when Americans were pulled out of Vietnam, there were a lot of people who were not able to adapt to the new economy and earn a lot of money. And my mom and dad were among those people. And so growing up, we didn't have a lot of money, but what we had was a lot of unconditional love from my parents. And my mom actually was a stay-at-home mom. And so she was able to spend a lot of time with us, teaching us, I think, a lot of subjects between first grade and fifth grade. But after fifth grade, I think that we were able to become more independent and we were able to study on our own and sort of wean off of her teaching. But she was really involved in our schooling. And my mom and dad taught me a lot of life lessons that I'm still thinking about and actually teaching my students nowadays as well.
And did their influence help first spark the seed to study in the U.S.?
My parents were really concerned about losing me.
So it was kind of opposite.
Yeah, it was the opposite. It wasn't what I expected when I told them I wanted to come to the U.S. to study. Part of it is because of the sort of Confucius traditions that we have in Vietnam, because the son is supposed to stay with the parents. And when he marries a girl, she'll have to come live with the parents as well. And so growing up, those were my parents' sort of expectations and vision of what having a son would entail. And when I told them that I was gonna leave Vietnam to go to the US, they were not very happy about it because they thought that they would lose me and I would lose the Vietnamese culture and the language. But I still speak really good Vietnamese. I still love Vietnamese culture and I still try to visit them whenever I can. So I like to think that they were wrong in thinking that they would lose me.
Well, I'm sure they've got to be proud of you now too with all that you've accomplished in the US.
Yeah, I don't really talk about my accomplishments in the US a lot with my parents. I tell them in general what I have done and what I hope to do in the future. But what's interesting, what struck me when I told them that I got the job at Santa Monica College was their sort of almost lackluster response to it. And I'll tell you why. It's beyond their imagination that I was able to achieve what I have achieved here in the US. It's beyond my imagination, to be honest. But ever since I was a student at SRJC, every step that I have taken was to be closer to becoming a community college instructor. And so when I achieved that goal, it was like the biggest accomplishment I'd ever had. But what I told my parents that, hey, I actually got the job and I'm now a professor at a community college. It's what I've been working towards. They were like, oh, that's great. And then they moved on to the next topic that they wanted to talk about.
So your mom never made that connection where, you know, she was such an influential part of your life and teaching you that you're now a teacher. And in some ways, yeah, I would think kind of carrying on that spirit that you got from her. She never drew that parallel?
No, she never did.
Oh, wow.
I think it's because they expected good things that I will do in the future, but they couldn't comprehend the magnitude of what I was able to achieve because in order to get the job, I spent literally 10 years and everything I did during those 10 years was to be able to become a college instructor. And so it was a huge accomplishment for me, but because they were not there to see all the painstaking steps that I had to go through in order to accomplish that goal, they were not able to comprehend the magnitude of that success. And so that's something that I sort of regret. It's really easy to succeed and be happy with what you have accomplished. It's a lot harder to become successful and carry everybody else in your life with you and be able to include them in that success and to help them understand that they were a part of that success and that without them, I wouldn't be able to do it. But because I think they weren't here to see me go through all those steps, that they were not able to comprehend the magnitude of that achievement.
And those steps started, you said, at SRJC Santa Rosa Junior College. How did you end up there? That's where your studies started.
Yeah, when I decided to study abroad in the US, I reached out to my uncle in Santa Rosa. So he is my mom's younger brother. At the time, he had lived in the US for many decades. And so he was experienced with the education system in the US. And he had a beautiful family that I lived with. And so he was just, you know, a really like obvious person to reach out to when I was interested in studying in the US. So I reached out to him and he said, oh yeah, no, there's a high school in Santa Rosa. It's actually a Seventh-day Adventist, a Christian high school. And so I enrolled at that school because at the time, if you were an international student, you could not really enroll at a public school because public schools were funded by American taxpayers. And so if you attend public schools, you would have to reimburse public schools. Some public schools didn't even have that option for international students, including the schools that were in Santa Rosa. And the schools that I could attend were only private schools, particularly religious schools. And so that's why I chose to attend. It was called Redwood Adventist Academy. And so I spent a year and a half there. The main reason was because I was able to live with my uncle and stay close to family.
And at Santa Rosa Junior College, you connected with a physiology instructor named Nick Anast. Am I pronouncing his last name correctly?
Yeah, Anast.
Anast, okay.
Yeah.
Can you talk about Nick and the impact he had on your life?
After graduating from Redwood, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. And so I attended the local community college in Santa Rosa, mainly just to stay with my uncle because he was really helpful in sort of helping me navigate the American life. And so I stayed with him in Santa Rosa after graduating from high school, and I attended SRJC. And SRJC is special because it's sort of elite for its academic standards, but it's actually very egalitarian when it comes to the students that it admits, because all of my friends were people from all walks of life, including international students, rich or poor. And so I was able to figure out what I wanted to do at SRJC. I thought I wanted to be a nurse, but after taking the physiology class with Nick, I found out that I really like science and that I like teaching science, talking about science. And that's when I switched my major from nursing to biology. And at the time, I was paying out-of-state tuition because I was an international student. I had to, at times, work at three different locations on campus just to sort of cobble enough money to pay for school. And so I didn't really have time to do research. I told Nick that I really want to do research with you, but I can't afford to quit any of these jobs because that money is important because I need to use that money to pay for tuition. And Nick said, oh, come on in. I have this like research grant that I wrote. So I have money to pay you so you can quit one of those jobs so that you can work on this project. Because he understood at the time that research experience was really important for my future goals. If you want to go to grad school, you need to have research experience. And so he put me on that project and he said, there's a research grant that will pay for your stipend, so don't worry about quitting one of your jobs. So I did that. It was an ant research project in the local area. And I did that for a couple of years. And it was that research experience that helped me get into another research program at a local university called Sonoma State University. And it was that experience that helped me get into the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota. And it was because of that research experience at Mayo Clinic that I was able to earn a full ride scholarship to Cornell. And so I think my success now was because of Nick sort of graciously bringing me onto the project and paying me to do research. When I was at Cornell in 2014, I found out from a friend that Nick had passed away because of a tragic kayaking accident. When I found out about it, I was heartbroken and I was lost for words. But what really like struck me was the fact that Nick, I found out later that Nick paid me out of his pocket. There wasn't a grant that he could use to pay me.
Wow.
It was his own money that he paid me with so that I could use that money to pay for school so that I can stay in school. And so I was touched and inspired by Nick's passion for science, but also his compassion for students. If it weren't for his compassion, I would not have been able to do research under his wings, and I would not have been able to get all of these other research fellowships that came afterwards. So it was that compassion for students that really inspired me to sort of give back to community college students. And so a few years later, after I graduated from Cornell, I worked with the president of SRJC, the SRJC biology faculty, and also SRJC Foundation, to found a research fellowship so that we can bring community college students, especially from SRJC, to Cornell to do research. And so my whole time at Cornell, I was able to bring 3 different students from SRJC to do research at Cornell. I wanted to give them the same kind of opportunity and chance that Nick gave me, which was instrumental in my success. And so one of my fellows is now a doctor.
Wow.
The other 2 are now transfer students to UC San Diego. One is at UC Davis, and they both secured research opportunities once they transferred. And so it has really paid off. Nick's sort of original compassion has carried on and really helped these students gain experience that would help them succeed in whatever goals they have. And so SRJC is sort of an instrumental part of my success and other people's successes too.
I love these type of stories. I would even argue that it dates back even further. You know, your mom was the one who first pushed that domino over to set that chain reaction going. And then it seems like Nick was another person in your life that set that domino over to create that chain reaction to really lead to all these amazing things. And your quote, so we've exchanged emails leading up to this. And in your email signature, you have a quote from Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
It says, quote, "Remember that no one succeeds on their own. Never walk alone on your future paths," unquote.
Yeah. She's my hero. After the Supreme Court decision that helped a lot of same-sex couples legally marry in the U.S., I became really interested in the U.S. Supreme Court and the people that make up that institution. I was really impressed with Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor because there's a lot of struggles that she had to overcome that I felt like were really similar to mine and to a lot of international students. And that's the message that I'm trying to convey here, is that when international students come to the U.S., they feel like they're aliens. In fact, in the immigration law, they use the word alien to describe international students. So we're used to that term, and we're used to being called aliens. But if you think about it, we're very similar to a lot of students and people who are Americans, who were born here, because the struggles that they had to overcome when they were little can be very similar to your struggles. And so I gave you an example from Justice Sotomayor. English wasn't her first language. Spanish was. And she was able to get into Princeton after graduating from high school. But as soon as she got there, she realized that she didn't have the language skills required to succeed in college. And she got a C on one of her history papers. And so she was able to reach out to one of her professors, and he went through line by line what she did wrong. And she wrote everything down, and she tried to make sure that she wouldn't make the same mistakes again. That kind of learning was what I was trying to do in my own life as well. So when I met my now husband, I asked him, if I say anything wrong, point it out to me so that I can write a note so that I won't make the same mistake in the future. And so now if you go into my notes app on my phone, there's a running list of all of the mistakes that I have made over the years. And when I have time, I would go through that list to make sure that I don't make the same mistakes in the future. So I think that there's a lot of similarities between Americans and international students that if you think about it, it would make you feel less of an alien in this wonderful country. And it would make you feel like you do belong here and that you do have the necessary skills to succeed in college and that you can connect with Americans that come from the same or similar backgrounds.
Such an important message. As you were talking, this image popped into my head of you and your husband celebrating your 50th wedding anniversary and looking through your list on your phone of the mistakes that he helped you with.
Yeah, I would totally do that at our 50th anniversary. I think it'd be really funny to tell people the history behind that running list of all the mistakes that I made. And you know, when I first met him, I was really stubborn because I was stuck in my own way of thinking. And so when he pointed out something to me that was clearly wrong, I would like argue back. And I would try to convince him that he was wrong. But it was that sort of conversation and dialogue that really helped me make sense of the mistakes that I made. And it really helped me remember everything that he was telling me. So I would encourage other students to not be afraid of reaching out. You need to find that person who you feel safe around to be able to point out those things. And you need to initiate that because most Americans are very nice and they have really good intentions. So they're not going to point out those mistakes. So that's considered rude here. But if you initiate that request and you say, I know that you don't want to point out the mistakes that I make, but I'd like you to do so. It would help me learn and not make the same mistakes. And when you do that with a really close friend or someone that you trust, I promise you, you're going to gain so much from it that in a year, even a year, not even 50 years, even a year, you will realize that your language skills will have improved a lot because of that sort of interaction with that close friend.
You're clearly a teacher at heart, just the way you explain things and have described these experiences that you've had. That teacher really comes through, and your students are so lucky to have you. And thank you so much for sharing these beautiful stories with us.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Thank you again for listening to International Student Stories. And thank you to our team for putting together this episode. Stories are meant to be shared, so please pass the story on to a friend or family member who needs to hear a good story. A few other quick notes. I invite you to check out the show notes if you want more details on some of the topics discussed in this episode. For all the latest podcast news, stop by our website, studyintheusaglobal.com/podcast. That's STUDY in the USA global.com/podcast. Subscribe to the International Student Stories podcast to be alerted on new episodes. And contact us if you know of a current or former international student whose story needs to be shared with the world. Goodbye for now. Be well, and much love to each and every one of you.